We're going to continue tonight our study of the providence of God, and we've mentioned in previous classes that the providence of God is often divided into two main categories, and I want to get in to one of those main categories tonight. Often, when you study the providence of God, it'll be divided into the general providence of God and then the special providence of God. And the general providence of God is providence that is exercised by God towards all of mankind. It's the providence of not just all of mankind. We'll see even tonight it's exercised even toward animal kind and the like. So there's the general providence of God that is continuing to work in this earth. And here's how we've kind of described providence, that God's supervision, that his exercise, that his plan, that his care is still being carried out on this earth. God created all things. But the important thing to see about providence is that God continues to sustain all things. He did not create everything and then just leave us to ourselves, leave the world to itself, leave all of creation to itself to exist on our own. But that he had a purpose in creation. He had a purpose for everything that he created. And God is still working behind the scenes as it is. He's still working to bring about the purpose for which things have been created. And if we have been created to bring honor and glory to God, if we have been created in order that we might spend an eternity with God, he is still working behind the scenes to make that happen. And what we need to see, and we've talked about this several times, and we'll probably even talk about it in a lesson specifically in a few weeks again, what we need to see is that the providence of God does not nullify our free will. When we say that God works in our lives, when we say that God is providentially working even behind the scenes to work things out in our life for the purpose for which he created us, that doesn't remove our own free will. God can be working, but we can still turn against God. We still have free will enough. It says, even though God created me for a purpose, I don't have to fulfill that purpose. And while God may want me to, and while God may be striving to bring about situations in my life that can cause me to serve him, I don't have to. I can go about life and live it however I choose. And so tonight we're going to be looking at this idea of the general providence of God. And next week hopefully we'll get into talking about some of the aspects of this, what is often called the special providence of God. And that's just the special care and the special providence that God has for his children. There's the general providence that is available to all of creation. But when you're a child of God, God takes it to a different level. And when you're a child of God, there is a special providence that's available to us. And we've talked about it over the course of the quarter, but we'll begin talking about it more specifically next week. Let me talk about five or six things tonight, depending on how much time we have. The very sustenance of human life. The very idea that our life as a human is sustained at all on this earth is because of God. Paul said in Acts chapter 17, and here's a verse we need to know, that in him we live and we move and we have our being. What does that mean? Does that mean that we could exist apart from him? Does that mean that we could exist apart from God, that we could move apart from God, that we could even have an existence apart from God? Well, we need to recognize that this is not just special providence for God's children. This is general providence for all of creation. Even Paul called himself the chief of sinners, even the chief of sinners today is still under the general providence of God. Why? How can we say that? How can we say that the worst sinner in the world is still under the providence of God? Yeah, we're going to talk about that, about the rain falling on the just and the unjust. Does he have air to breathe? Does he have gravity to help hold him to the ground? You know, does he have atmospheric pressure to help, you know, regulate his body? Does he have blood flowing through his... I mean, what is there that the chief, the worst of sinners, has that is not provided by God? So even, whether it's sinners or whether it's Christians, and everybody on the face of the earth is existing and being sustained because of God's providence. Look in Job chapter 21. Just briefly, here's one of Job's remarks, and we'll be looking, I was going to say mark the book of Job. We're going to come back to the book of Job in just a minute. We're going to be looking at some passages in Psalms as well. Job chapter 21. We won't look at this whole passage as it's on the screen for you. Let's start down in verse 22. Job 21, verse 22. Can anyone teach God knowledge since he judges those on high? Here it talks about people. It says, one dies in full strength, being wholly at ease and secure. His pails are full of milk and the marrow of his bones is moist. So here's one person who dies and pretty well off, aren't they? You know, they got all the milk they want. Their bones are fine. They're at ease. They're secure. Verse 25, another man dies in the bitterness of his soul, never having eaten with pleasure. He didn't have all the abundance that this other man had. What's the first word that you have in verse 26? They. Here's one man, well off in life. Here's another man, not so well off in life. But what happens? They lie down alike in the dust, and worms cover them. If you go back up into the previous verses, it talks about, look at verse 19. Here's what some people are saying, that God lays up one's iniquity for his children. Let him recompense him that he may know it. Let his eyes see his destruction, and let him drink of the wrath of the Almighty. For what does he care about his household after him when the number of his months is cut in half? Here's Job looking at life and recognizing that while a child of God might have special providence, that in reality we're all here, we all have the same thing, and when we die, our bodies are all going to have the same, you know, not talking about the spirit. It's talking about life from its very existence, even to the end of its existence, is very similar. Whether you are a Christian or a non-Christian, there is that sustenance that God provides. Let's look at this other factor, this other idea of general providence, and that is that the forces of nature and weather are in God's control. Now, that does not mean that God purposefully steers hurricanes towards some people and purposefully doesn't steer them towards others. It doesn't mean that he purposefully brings an earthquake on one house and not on another, and that he's vindictive in some sense. But does God have control of nature? Sometimes we use the expression Mother Nature. Not sure where we came up with that idea. I don't read about Mother Nature in the Bible. I read about God, and I read about God controlling the forces of nature and controlling, being in control of the weather. Genesis chapter 8 and verse 22. This is when Noah is coming out of the ark, and the expression there is the idea that God would continue to control the seasons. Now, that doesn't mean a whole lot to us here, because God doesn't control the seasons very well down here in Florida, apparently, unless he just likes hot, hotter and hot. You know, does God control seasons? How does he control seasons? Does he control the sun? Does he control the stars? Or did he just create them and they're just out there and he doesn't have anything to do with them? How does the sun continue to burn? How does the sun continue to give off heat and give off light? Is God not in control of that? That's what Job says in Job chapter 9. God's in control of that. He's in control of the stars and whether they shine or not. So here's God in control of all of these things. Let's go back to Job 37, and then we're going to look at Psalm 147 to see the control that God has over nature. Job 37. Here's again, indication of the work of God. The end of verse 5, Job 37, the end of verse 5 says, he does great things which we cannot comprehend. Is that an understatement? Job 37, end of verse 5, he does great things which we cannot comprehend. For he says to the snow, fall to the earth. Who's in control of the snow? God is. Likewise to the gentle rain and the heavy rain of his strength. Who's in control of the rain? God is. Look down in verse 10. By the breath of God, ice is given, and the broad waters are frozen. Also with moisture, he saturates the thick clouds. He scatters his bright clouds, and they swirl about, being turned by his guidance, that they may do whatever he commands them on the face of the whole earth. He causes them to come, whether for correction or for his land or for mercy. What is all of that saying? What does that mean? What kind of control does God have over creation? What kind of control does he have over the elements, over weather, over the forces of nature? See, we think there's just Mother Nature, and there's what's this thing called that I can't think of what this particular epidemic is causing all of our hurricanes not to come here. Not global warming. El Nino. Yeah, we think, you know, we've got all of these forces around that are causing all of these things to happen or not happen. Is God in control or not? Or is it just happen? Do these things just happen to happen and there's no control behind it? Go to Psalm 147, and Jerry, make your comment while we're going there.
I was just thinking about that word correction in verse 13.
Yes.
Because scientists now know that even as bad as hurricanes can be to those that get hit by them, that they're actually a way of taking hot air and moving it to the cold areas and vice versa, so that the planet doesn't get stagnant.
Yes. Jerry's talking about the word correction that was there in verse 13. And that could be talking about the correction of the whole system of nature and the whole system of the earth that certain weather patterns bring to correct, whether it be the soil, whether it be the atmosphere, whether it be the temperatures or that kind of thing. This could also be talking about the fact that God's weather patterns can be brought upon certain ones to bring correction to the people. And that's another factor, and we'll talk about that more in just a minute. Look in Psalm 147. Is that what I said? This we could read this whole psalm. It's the whole thing is just saturated with this idea of the providence of God. Look in verse 8, where it says, God covers the heavens with clouds. He prepares rain for the earth. He makes grass to grow on the mountains. What does that tell us about our water cycle? What does that tell us about, you know, how things actually come into existence and how things grow? Where does rain come from? Because, you know, you crossed your fingers and lifted up your eyes and you did some kind of rain dance and all of a sudden rain. Where does rain come from? Now, did God put certain factors into this earth to cause rain to come about? When a certain front meets this, and when certain temperatures meet that, and when certain atmospheric pressures meet this, and I don't know all of those things, but you know that certain elements of this earth work together to create rain. Can God control those elements that He created? Or are they just haphazardly moving around this earth? Say again? Elijah? Three and a half years.
James 5.
Yeah, James chapter 5, talking about there being a period of 3.5 years when it didn't rain. Now, can God control can He control them to hold back? Can He control them to go forth? See, I think we limit God. Well, you know, God doesn't control the weather. He doesn't. Why can't God control the weather? Is He not big enough? Not smart enough? You know, does He not care?
No, it's more that we've been trained by our society to think mankind is so important. We're destroying the earth. Why? Because we're in control and we're all powerful and we have all of this that's destroying it. We don't stop to think that God's in control of it, because whether we choose to or not, that message that's in society just saturates our brains.
We have a tendency to bring God down to our level and try to understand Him and His power in our own finite way. And yet, is there any limit And was it last week, week before? When did we talk about the omnipotence of God? Is there any limit that we can place on God? Is there any limit we can place on the omnipotent, all-powerful God? Look down in, let's look down at verse 16. Again about snow, he gives snow like wool. He scatters the frost like ashes. He casts out his hail like morsels. Who can stand before his cold? He sends out his word and melts them. He causes his wind to blow and the waters to flow. I like how it says his hail, and we'll see this again in a minute, and his wind in verse 18. Who's in control of these things? Who do the elements belong to? They belong to God. And he is the one. The forces of nature and the weather are at his control. In Matthew chapter 5, here's the verse that Emily quoted a moment ago about not only the rain being sent on the just and the unjust, but he makes the sun to rise on the evil and the good. Well, we don't think about that. Why? Well, just because it, I don't know, what is it, 6:30 a.m.? I don't know when the sun's coming up now time. I'm usually in the shower. 6:30 a.m., it's coming up, and 6 o'clock, it's whatever it is. We just think, well, it's just always going to do that because it always has, right? We just figure it's just going to keep on doing it. Who's making it do that? Well, it was just put into a system, and it's just running on batteries, and when those batteries run down, then, you know, it'll stop. Those are pretty good batteries to keep, you know, keep it going, aren't they? Why does it keep coming up? Why does it keep setting? And are good people benefiting from the sun more than evil people? I mean, you're a Christian, right? Do you get more benefit out of the sun than a non-Christian? Nope. Pardon? You appreciate it more. But do your flowers grow faster than the guy next door? Does he get a sunburn quicker than you do because you're a Christian and you got a little extra UV protection because you're a Christian? I mean, the sun gives us the same blessings. What about the rain? Does it rain more at your house than your neighbor's house? That could happen, couldn't it? I mean, who's to say it doesn't? Is your neighbor benefiting from rain? If he became a Christian, if he came and got baptized, would he get more water from God? I don't know. You know, here's some questions. Who not? You haven't put little, you know, measuring whatever they are out in your yard to compare. But what is Jesus say in this passage? The sun and the rain provide benefits for all of creation. Is that the general providence of God? Could we survive without the sun? Could we survive without rain? Could we survive without water? No. Acts chapter 14. Nevertheless, and it says something similar in that God did good. He gave us rain from heaven and fruitful seasons. But I want us to see the first part of this. He did not leave himself without witness. And then he talks about sending the rain and sending the seasons. What does the first part of that verse mean? What is that saying about the rain and the seasons? What is it, Emily? Right. Yeah. So Emily talks about Romans 1 and verse 20 that says, here's all of these visible things, and by these visible things we can know that there is a God, to where the point of God says, you're without excuse if you don't believe it. You know, Psalm 19, the heavens declare what? The heavens are telling us there's a God. The firmament, everything we see around us is showing us handiwork. What is the book of Acts saying? Just by rain and by seasons, what do we know? There's a God. That the rain and the seasons, this verse says, is a witness for God and for His as if everything else in creation is not. But everything we see shouts out to us that there is a God. And yet, even those evil and unjust who are benefiting from these things often ignore them. What about animals? Is that our next point? Does God maintain and use His animal creation? Do His animals have any purpose, or are they just like there for fun? Do they have any purpose for us? go fetch the newspaper, right? I mean, they've got a purpose. Job 12 and verse 10, in the hands of God is the life of every living thing. Is that true? Humans are in his hands. Is every other living creature in the hand of God? Matthew chapter 6 and verse 26. What are birds? What good are birds? Do birds they plant any seeds? Do they go back and reap those seeds? They neither sow, they neither reap, and they don't gather into barns. Wouldn't it be great if you could train birds to do that? To go plant the seed, harvest the seed, harvest the crop, bring it in, put it in the barn. You know any birds that do that? You know any animals that do that?
They don't need to. Their father provides them.
Ah, your heavenly Father feeds them. They're not doing it for themselves. Where are they getting their food? And these passages from Psalms tell us, Psalm 147, God gives to the beast its food and to the young ravens that cry. Psalm 104, the young lions roar after their prayer and they seek their food from who? God. Where are they getting their food? When you watch the Nature Channel and here's this young lion or here's this beast running after its prey, guess what? That prey has been given to him by God. Here's this food chain, and where you are on the food chain, that's his food from God. God's providing even for animals. And so Jesus' point back in Matthew chapter 6 is, if God's providing for his animals, then what? If God's providing for a bird who's not doing anything to sow, reap, or harvest, what's he going to do for you? He's going to take care of us, isn't he? So when you look at the general providence of God, is God doing anything with his creation? Matthew chapter 10 talks about a sparrow doesn't even fall to the ground without God knowing about it. It's that passage that talks about the hairs of your head. He knows the hairs of your head and he knows when a bird falls. A sparrow that's not worth anything, and yet he knows when a sparrow falls to the ground. Trudy? Well, and that's the context of Matthew chapter 6, isn't it? Has God made promises? Here's a bird. He's going to feed the birds. Here's the lily of the field. Boy, they neither toil nor spin, but guess what? They're beautiful, and they're all taken care of by God. What's he going to do? Is he going to take care of us? We're going to look at Matthew chapter 6 in the coming weeks and see how the Matthew chapter 6 is teaching the providence of God. And yet all of this is just in a general sense. Did God ever use his animals in a special sense? Genesis 22, when Abraham's ready to sacrifice his son, did God do anything? How did that ram get over there? Is he just having a bad day? I mean, why are his thorns stuck in the bush? Surely he's smart enough to know, don't put your horns in the bush. How did he get there? How did those snakes get among God's people in Numbers 21? Did the snakes take a wrong turn? How did they get there? How did those, and where is it? 2 Kings 1, or no, I think it's 2 Kings 2, where those children are calling out to Elisha. I don't like the word, but old bald head. How did those she bears get there? Those female bears? Where'd they come from? They just be happened to walking along. Ooh, 42 children. This looks good. How'd they get there? Does God use his creation? Good. God used a donkey to talk to Balaam. You got any questions about does God use his creation? That donkey was smarter than that man riding on him. He could see, he could respect, he could know what to do. But the point is, if God does all of that for his animals and with his animals, why do we limit him when it comes to what He does for us and with us. Think about God in relationship to His control over the nations of this earth. And here's what we do when we see this. We see a point that says God exercises providential control over the nations of the world, and we start thinking of exceptions, right? We say, well, why isn't He over here? Why isn't He doing anything over there? You know, if God was really exercising, you know, His control over all the world, there'd be peace everywhere, and there wouldn't be any turmoil. There wouldn't be this stuff in Kenya. There wouldn't be this stuff in Iraq. There wouldn't be this stuff. Why are those statements not valid statements to make as an objection to that statement? Because man has free will. Trudy, that's what you're going to say? Man has free will. So what does that mean? That God can be exercising His providential care and man be working completely against God. Does man do that? And when man works counter to God and works counter to what God wants in this world, what's going to happen? Big problems. But does God have any control over the nations of this earth? Is He not the ruler? Psalm 22 and verse 28, He rules over the nations. Is that true? Look in Daniel. Look at what Daniel says in Daniel chapter 4. Y'all turning Bibles because it's not going to be on the screen or anything like that. Daniel chapter 4. Here's, and it's interesting who is saying this in Daniel chapter 4. Who's talking to Daniel chapter 4? Nebuchadnezzar. Guess what Nebuchadnezzar learned? Daniel 4 and verse 17. Nebuchadnezzar learned, he says, this decision is by the decree of the watchers and the sentence by the word of the holy ones, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, gives it to whomever He will, and sets over it the lowest of men. What's that passage mean? Who's in control of who's in control of the nations? Who's in control of those who are over the nations? God's in control. The Most High rules in the kingdoms of men. The Most High gives the kingdoms to whomever He will. The Most High sets over these kingdoms the lowest of men. If you go back to Daniel chapter 2, you see in verse 21, and this is Daniel answering the Nebuchadnezzar, and he says that God, Daniel 2:21, changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and He raises up kings. Do you not see that throughout the Bible? Does God do that throughout the Bible, that He removes kings? And we'll talk about some in a minute, that He raises up kings. Did God elevate Daniel to a position of power? Did God elevate Joseph to a position of power? Did God remove Nebuchadnezzar from a position of power? God's in control of those who rule. Look at what Christ told Pilate. You could have no power at all against me unless what? Unless it had been given to you by Rome. Is that what he said? You couldn't do anything to me unless the Roman Empire let you. No. You couldn't do anything unless you had that power from above. Who's in charge? Who raises up kings? Who removes kings? Who gives kingdoms to whomever He will? It's God. And in Romans chapter 13, we learn about God giving to government. Now, we don't like the government sometimes, and so we want to question Romans 13, and sometimes people want to question the wisdom of God, saying, why did you give that to the government? Did God give any power to the government? Do we have a responsibility to submit ourselves to the government? That's what Romans 13 is talking about, because there is regulation that they have, there's control that the government has. Is the government responsible for protection of those who are innocent? Yes. Are they responsible for prosecuting those who are guilty? Yes. Who gave them that power? Well, God gave them the power to do that. And that's part of the providence of God. But what happens is when governments go too far, when governments go so far that they are no longer fulfilling that basic purpose for which God created them and for which God allowed them to come into existence, what's going to happen? If a government or a nation goes so far that they are no longer fulfilling the purpose, remember, providence of God is working so that everything that He created will fulfill its created purpose. If a nation's not fulfilling its purpose, what's going to happen to that nation? You know what's going to happen to that nation. God knows how to remove them. That's the power of God that's still working today, and He can, consistent with His own holiness, even use evil men to bring about the fall of nations. Did He do that in the Old Testament? Nebuchadnezzar. Some of these are confusing passages, but I had to get them all on one screen. This Isaiah chapter 10, I've tried to separate these into categories. Isaiah chapter 10 talks about Assyria and God using Assyria to come against Israel, His own people. Go back to Isaiah and look at this passage real quick. Go back to Isaiah chapter 10 and recognize in Isaiah chapter 10 that when God is choosing a nation, His people have rebelled against Him. His people are no longer listening to His prophets that He's sending. And so in Isaiah chapter 10, in verse 5, He calls Assyria the rod of My anger. God's going to come against His own nation of Israel. Who's He going to come against Him with? Some nation that doesn't even serve Him. Some nation that doesn't care anything about serving God, the nation of Assyria. And so down in verse 10 or verse 7, he's talking about Assyria. He says, and Assyria doesn't even mean to do it. I'm using them, but Assyria doesn't even mean to be used by Me, but they're being used by Me. When God's providence and God's purpose is determined that a nation that has turned against Him so far that they're no longer going to fulfill that purpose, He'll even use an evil nation. And as Dan said, even Nebuchadnezzar, and that's what you have in these white passages right here, is that Assyria finally needed to be toppled, and so God raised up Babylon and raised him up against His own people. That's what Habakkuk is talking about, raising him up against His own people. Isaiah chapter 10 is talking about raising him up against Assyria. They defeated Assyria, and then they came against God's own people in Judah. And so in Jeremiah chapter 25 and verse 9, I'm coming to you in just a second, Dan. Jeremiah 25 and verse 9, God calls Nebuchadnezzar My servant. His servant. Here's one of the most wicked kings that we read about, and he's a servant of God. How can he be called a servant of God? Because God is using him to fulfill His purpose. Dan? That's true. That's a good point about animals being mentioned in reference to the destruction of Nineveh and the destruction of Assyria and even concern for them as well. But it's a good point about God sending Jonah to Nineveh. What does God just give up on people and say, I'm not even going to try? He sends Jonah there. You think about the fact, and did we mention that? We think we talked about this last week, about Abraham and his desire to save Sodom and Gomorrah and God's willingness to even save those two cities for 10 righteous people. But yet there were cities, and we're talking about nations, and there were cities that were destroyed by God. You get to Isaiah chapter 13, and now, and this just go in order of the world empires. This first yellow one is Assyria. And God using Assyria. This white one right here is God using Babylon, who destroyed Assyria. This yellow one right here is God using the Medo-Persian Empire, who came along and conquered Babylon. And when you get into Isaiah chapter 44, the last verse of 44, the first verses of chapter 45, talking about Cyrus, this pagan king, and yet what is God, how does God refer to Cyrus? This king who didn't want to serve God, wasn't trying to serve God. He refers to Cyrus, I think it's the last verse of chapter 44 where he calls him my shepherd. And the first verse of the next chapter, he calls him my anointed. Folks, the word anointed is a special word in the Bible. I mean, Messiah and Christ means the anointed one. But in this case, Cyrus was God's anointed to carry out his work. Was Cyrus one of his children? Was Cyrus serving him? Was Cyrus worshiping God? No, but God was going to use him. Richard? Yes.
When the Iron Curtain fell and we were allowed to go into Russia or all the Russian states with, for about a 10-year window, almost unlimited access, and then it tightened back up. But that Romans 13 scripture really gave the Russian people a lot of problems, because for 70 years they were told that there was no God.
Richard, if you didn't hear him, Richard's mentioning even in modern day how when the Iron Curtain fell and we were able to go into Russia, how that, and he mentioned the problems that that the Russians had with Romans 13 and how their government had been teaching that there was no God, but how we see that when we were able to go in and teach the gospel, that now there are churches all over Russia. But because of that, was that two bells or one bell? What did I get there? One and a half bells. I thought there was a special bell in there. But here's God. He works among animals. Does he work among us? God's in control of nations. If God's concerned about the birds, and yet God is, you know, that's on a small level, and yet God is concerned about and in control of world empires. When you're talking about Assyria and Babylon, the Medo-Persians, and the Roman Empire in Matthew 22 and verse 7, where Rome was going to come against Jerusalem, what did God call the Roman army? His armies. Those were his armies that were coming in to destroy Jerusalem. God concerned about the bird and in control of that bird. And yet here's great nations that God is over, and here we are in between. We're not a nation by ourselves. We're greater than, more valuable, Jesus says, than we are, than a sparrow is. Is God concerned about us? You think God is working in our lives? If this general providence is at work in other ways, let me just briefly make this point, and you may not think this is a big deal, but is the general providence of God available in the fact that people can have good relationships in a domestic sense? I mean, are there people enjoying? Did God create the home in Genesis 2 or not? Where did the home come from? Came from God. Are there non-Christians enjoying the benefits of a home today? You may say, well, there's a lot of them who aren't enjoying the benefits of a good home. All right, there's a lot of Christians that aren't enjoying the benefit of a good home. Is everybody on this earth given the opportunity to enjoy the benefits of a home that God created, that God made in the very beginning? You see the general providence of God, that there are a lot of cases where God is providing benefits for people that want nothing to do with Him. And we have those same benefits too. We have the same rain, we have the same sun, we have the same blessings of a home. And yet what we'll talk about next week is that when God comes to us, He's going to take it to a much greater level. But what we need to come away with from tonight is, if God's so concerned about all of these things, and if He's working for birds, and if He's working for nations that don't even care about Him, what we're trying to show this quarter is that if God be for us, and He is, if God be for us, what does the rest of the verse say? Who can be against us? Every good and perfect gift comes from where? Comes down from God. Is God going to take care of us? God going to provide for us in more ways than we can even fathom? Do we need to build our trust in God? Do we need to put our faith in God and trust that He's going to take care of us? Sometimes we don't. Boy, we put the target on ourselves and we say, what am I going to do? How am I going to handle this? How? Cast all your cares upon Him, for He cares for you. And folks, we got to learn how to do that. We got to learn how to be anxious for nothing, but to turn things over to God. Is He in control or isn't He? Are we going to let Him be in control of our lives or aren't we? All right, we'll break for just a couple minutes and let the other classes come in.